It's the first day of 2010.
It is.
And we're looking back on the decade that we just left. It's still kind of fresh in our mind. And we've been talking about a lot of classy stuff this week. Politics and other things that be classy. Let's move it over to pop culture.
Win this, you stay on the island a few days longer. Lose, you face tomorrow's tribal council where one of you will be the first person voted off the island.
Get you sexy, huh?
I'm not sure it's over for Britney, but is Britney back? 81% said no.
Tiger always gives 110%. That's why he gave 100% to his wife and still had 10% left over for his mistress.
So thank you so much for giving me a chance to win a VMA award.
I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
Have you seen this new reality show called The Jersey Shore on MTV?
I like it, Italian boys and muscles.
What can you possibly say to somebody who looks like Rambo pretty much with a shirt off?
Joining us are two takeaway contributors. It's my favorite package of the entire week. Two contributors who know a thing or two about pop culture, Patrick Henry Bass, books editor for Essence Magazine, and Kate Daly, health and lifestyle editor for Newsweek. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Great to be here.
Patrick, let's start with that most ephemeral, most shame-making brand of pop culture. Of course, we speak of reality TV. Who knew it would still be around 10 years later and in a lot of ways even bigger than ever?
I have two words for you, Susan Boyle. Who would have thunk that a frumpy, and there's no one who loves a frump more than I do, a frumpy 48-year-old Scottish woman could go on a British reality show, draw more than 100 million people to watch that British reality show.
Right.
She releases a CD in the United States and beats Lady Gaga,
yeah,
Rihanna, and Adam Lambert, who came from American Idol. 10 years later, we still have these words in our mouths, and not to my happiness, Paris Hilton, who started on the reality show Simple Life. Reality television won't go away. And the disturbing part about it is it's only gaining traction. It's not, we're seeing no signs of reality shows slowing down.
Kate, you've been on this very radio program talking about reality TV. In your professional opinion, how long before Americans tire of this sort of awesome discourse?
So then I was looking around for, like, Ronnie, and then I see him on the dance floor with another girl. I'm not trying to, like, be played out. If I see you physically on the dance floor with another girl, like, then forget you.
Oh, Ronnie. That, of course, is from the TV show/phenomenon Jersey Shore. Kate, I mean, is there going to be a point when we ever, as a society, as Americans, get over this reality TV?
You know, just when you think we've hit our lowest point, we managed to go a little bit lower.
We turn the barrel over and actually scrape below the bottom of the barrel.
Yes. And 2009 was a big year for barrel scraping in reality TV. So you would think that maybe this would bring kind of the whole reality phenomenon to a close. You had Balloon Boy, whose family cost the government something like $40,000 because they were trying to get a reality show. You had people crashing the White House because they wanted to get on a reality show. And then you have, you know, the cultural train wreck that is Jersey Shore. So if anything is going to get people to give up reality TV, you would think that those things had happened. But it's so cheap to produce and it's so much fun to watch that I have a feeling it's not going anywhere soon.
Okay, switching to movies. Patrick, how did the film industry evolve during the last decade, you think?
It's interesting because it started out with great hope for indies and it ended with blockbusters. And I would say that that had more to do with the economy than it did the quality of the offerings from independent studios. So you started the decade with movies like Brokeback Mountain and Chicago, which, you know, revitalized the movie musical. And you end this week with the largest box office receipts in the history of Hollywood during Christmas holiday.
Kate, what interested you about film's evolution in the 2000s?
Well, one of the things that was encouraging for me to see is it seems like there's a lot more participation from women filmmakers at the end of the decade than there was at the beginning. Of course, when you say more participation, that goes from something like 7% female directors to maybe 14% female directors, so it's still a much smaller pool. But you're seeing people like Nancy Meyers have a lot more creative control. You're seeing Kathryn Bigelow make films like The Hurt Locker, which many people are saying are the best picture of the year. So from a back-end standpoint, from people who are actually making creative choices, directing, producing, writing, you're seeing more women involved, which is encouraging for me.
Okay, we started with reality TV, and then we went to movies. We're slowly making our way up the classiness ladder. Let's get seriously classy and talk about literature. Patrick, you're the books editor at Essence. What's your sense of whether Americans have changed their approach to buying and reading books in the 2000s.
Well, I was encouraged, if you look back at the decade, to see careers like Dave Eggers and Zadie Smith, and to see Ian McEwan do a novel like Atonement, which was accessible and quite beautiful and layered and nuanced. So I think what we're probably going to start to see, because of the conglomerization of publishing, we're going to see less and less authors. And so the authors that are published are going to be more specialized type authors. And authors like Dave Eggers, the next generation of those authors, are going to have to find their readers through social networking like Facebook and Twittering and those types of methods. It won't be through the traditional review media like Essence Magazine and Newsweek.
Okay, I have a question for both of you. Maybe you guys can settle an argument that we're having in the control room. Okay, Kate Daly, Patrick Henry Bass, looking back at the 10 years, keeping in mind where they both started in like 1999 and where they are now, who had the worst decade? Britney Spears or Tiger Woods?
Tiger Woods.
Really?
Yes.
I'm going to go with Britney Spears.
Okay.
I think if you're looking at the decade.
Yeah, the whole decade.
Britney started out at the top, and it's, you know, she gained some weight, she had some kids, she hit some cars with some umbrellas. It was not, you know, not a banner year for Britney. I think she's on the upswing, but collectively, I think Tiger still got all that money.
We have an entire century for more bimbos to go on television and say that they slept with Tiger Woods.
You know, yeah, but Britney Spears is not one of them. To her credit.
That we know of yet. That we know of yet, Luke.
All right. If those rumors start to foment, it will be, of course, on the internet. Let me ask quickly, Kate and Patrick, before we leave. Of the internet memes and phenomenons that popped up in the 2000s, what's the one that you're not sick of that you're still watching and enjoying, Patrick?
YouTube for me.
Kate, how about you?
I'm a big fan of podcasts. They really changed the way that I listen to stuff.
I have to say that the one that I still find myself returning to a disturbing number of times would be Tay Zonday's classic hit Chocolate Rain, featured on YouTube, and I guess you could listen to it as a podcast possibly. So it's only fitting we go out with that today. First, though, a big thanks, Kate Daly, health and lifestyle editor at Newsweek, and Patrick Henry Bass, books editor at Essence.
Thank you.
Thanks.